Genesis chapter 5. Here in Genesis chapter 5, we see a genealogy of 10 men. And I want to begin tonight with just a quotation from an unknown author that really kind of fits the theme of what we're going to be looking at here tonight. And that is, he said, the most significant contribution that you can that we can make in life is passing our faith to the next generation. The most significant contribution you can make in life is to pass your faith to the next generation. Very important statement and a very important thought. Here in Genesis chapter 5, we see 10 of the patriarchs and how they passed their faith to the next generation. Let me read some of this section. I don't know, perhaps I'll read it all, but I don't think I will. But just to give you an idea of the flow that is taking place here, beginning with verse number 1 of chapter 5, and it says, this is the book of the generations of Adam. Now, that's a key right there. When you're studying the book of Genesis, and you see that phrase, this is the book of the generations of. The generations of indicates that this was someone else that was Moses was using probably 10 different manuscripts when he compiled the book of Genesis. Each one of them starts with that phrase, the generations of. And this was the generations of Adam. And so they're giving us information here. And in the day that God created man in the likeness of God, made he him, male and female, created he them, and blessed them, and called their name Adam in the day when they were created. And Adam lived 130 years, and he begat a son in his own likeness after his image, and called his name Seth. And the days of Adam after he begat Seth were 800 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. And Seth lived 105 years and begat Enos. And Seth lived after he begat Enos 807 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. And Enos lived 90 years and begat Cainan. And Enos lived after he begat Cainan 815 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enos were 905 years, and he died. And Cainan lived 75 years, and he begat Mahalalel. And Cainan lived after he begat Mahalalel 840 years, and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Cainan were 910 years, and he died. And Mahalalel lived 65 years and begat Jared. And Mahalalel lived after he begat Jared 830 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. And Jared lived 162 years, and he begat Enoch. And Jared lived after he begat Enoch 800 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. And Enoch lived 65 years, and he begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God, and after he begat Methuselah 300 years, and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 165 years, and Enoch walked with God and was not, for God took him. And Methuselah lived 187 years and begat Lamech. And Methuselah lived after he begat Lamech 782 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. And Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son, and he called his name Noah, saying, this same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands, because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. And Lamech lived after he begat Noah 595 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, some very important things in this chapter. When you read a chapter like that, you can just say, oh, what a boring chapter, just a bunch of names. No, it's not just a bunch of names. There's a lot of information in there, a lot of really helpful information in there. And tonight what I want us to do is, as we look at this chapter, and consider the passing on of our faith to the next generation. There is a lot here for us to learn. And here in Genesis 5, I want us to see that God highlights these 10 men, Adam to Noah, for our benefit. And each of these 10 men, there's four facts I want us to see about each one of these four, these 10 men that can be a help to us. Now, note these four facts. They can be a help to you in your life, young people as well as older ones. Number one, each man lived for God. Each man lived for God. That's an important key. That's an important key. And we see this, that these men were the godly line from Adam all the way to Noah. And that these men were faithful to God. And while the text does not specifically and clearly state the fact, it strongly implies by the names and of the several of the men and the character of several of these men and by the discernment of Lamech in naming Noah and the fact that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and we see that in the very next chapter, that it says that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. All these things indicate that these men were godly men. These were men that lived for God. They had faith in God. And, for example, many of their names had special meanings. For example, Mahalalel, his name means praise of God. Alright, so when his father named him Mahalalel, when Kainan named him Mahalalel, he named him that because of his name meant praise of God. And then when Enoch means dedicated, alright, so when Jared gave birth to Enoch, he named him dedicated. Dedicated to what? Well, obviously dedicated to God. And so his name had an indication of Methuselah. Methuselah literally means a man of the dart. But some interpret that to mean the idea of it shall be sent, like a dart was sent. And there are many scholars that believe that it had to do with the flood coming. Because, interesting, you look through very carefully at all this, and Methuselah, the man who lived longer than any other recorded man in history, died the year that the flood came upon the earth. He outlived his father, his son. He outlived his son, because his son Lamech died several years before Methuselah, but Methuselah lived right up until the year that the flood came and he died. And so, very interesting to see that. Then also, the name Noah. Noah means rest. God was going to give rest to this troubled world. And his father, Lamech, named him that. God evidently was working in Lamech's heart and helped him to understand that your son is a special son. He's going to bring rest to this earth, a time of trouble. And they lived in dark days. It was a difficult time in those days, definitely, no question about it. And though these men were men of faith, God highlights just a few of them for us. And as we see the highlights, for example, Enos, the son of Seth, he actually is highlighted in the end of chapter 4, the last verse of chapter 4, and it says there, and to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. Now nobody really knows what that means. Certainly it doesn't mean that men didn't know God before that, but there was something about Enos and during Enos's life, or maybe it was at his birth, that Seth began to do this. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Nobody seems to know for sure what that is. But there was an indication that there was a drawing close to God. There was a revival of some sort at that point. We see also in the name Enoch. Enoch was highlighted because Enoch was a man who walked with God. And he walked with God so intently that God said, Enoch, why don't you just come home with me? And Enoch just disappeared and went to heaven. After 300 years of walking with God. I mean, 300 years. We look at it and think, well, yeah, he didn't live very long compared to the other guys. Yeah, he didn't compare to the other guys, but 300 years is three times longer than any of us are going to live. Right? And so he lived a long time and he was walking with God. And his fellowship with God was so sweet that God took him to heaven. There's only one other guy in the whole Bible that God did that with. Who was that? Elijah. Elijah went to heaven without dying. So God did a miracle. And you know, when you think about it, how many people in the Bible did God say they walked with God? Two. Enoch and Noah. The only two in the Bible that says that they walked with God. Now, I'm sure there were others that did, but those are the only two that God highlighted and said, these men walked with me. And so here's an example of a man who was godly. He walked with God. Methuselah. I already alluded to this a little bit, but Methuselah lived 969 years. I mean, that is a long time. That is just short of a whole millennium. 1,000 years. Just shy of 1,000 years. And he lived longer than anybody else recorded. There may have been some other long-living people. We don't know. But God wrote these down. And he lived the longest. And the fact that he died the year that the flood came is very insignificant, because it could be the, you know, you think about this, the man who lived the very longest of anybody recorded was the man who lived before the flood. And it could be that God said, all right, I just can't bear to send the flood yet. We'll postpone it a little bit, postpone it a little bit, postpone it a little bit, try to get some more people to listen. And Methuselah wasn't going to die until the year the flood came, and so he kept getting older and older. I don't know. But it's a picture of God's patience and long-suffering to men in his name. Lamech, it's a man who lived by faith as he named his son Noah, rest. He said, my son means rest. And in his days, there's going to be rest. So obviously, Lamech was a man who walked with God. And then Noah, we find over in the next chapter, chapter 6 and verse number 8, it says, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Noah was a man who found grace in the eyes of the Lord. He had a close relationship with God. He walked with God. Verse number 9, and the generations, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and a perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. Now, it didn't mean that he was sinless, but he was mature spiritually, and he was a righteous or just man, and he walked with God. That's very significant and very helpful. So we see in the names of these men that they were men who were men of faith. They lived for God. But then a second thing I want us to see here, a second fact, is that each of these men passed on their faith. They passed on their faith. Adam had a son in his own likeness. Look at verse 3. This is a very intriguing verse. Verse number 3, it says, and Adam lived 130 years, and he begat a son in his own likeness after his image, and called his name Seth. Now, a lot of questions come to my mind when I read that verse. Questions that nobody can answer except God. Was Seth Adam and Eve's next son born after Cain killed Abel? Kind of looks maybe like that, but it doesn't say that. He could have had several others, and then Seth was born, and God says, that's the one that's going to carry on the faith in the family. I don't know. Another question. What does it mean that Seth was born in Adam's likeness and image? That's pretty interesting. The same two terms are used back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. And God said, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. Chapter 2, verse 7. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. God created Adam in his God's image and in God's likeness. And now Adam has a son in his likeness and his image. So what part of the image of God that Adam got still existed? Was it the spiritual side of it? Was it the physical side of it? We don't know. But there was something here that he passed on to his son, and it seems to have something to do with the spiritual walk with God. So as you ask these questions, they get you thinking, and they get you pondering and praying and just saying, God, what are you talking about here? What does this mean? You know, one thing that we can detect here is that Adam passed on his faith in God to Seth. He passed on his faith in God to Seth. That's the key. That is the important part. Now, each man of these 10, each of them had a son who kept the faith. Adam had a son, Seth, that kept the faith. Seth had a son, Enos, that kept the faith. Enos had a son, Kainan, that kept the faith. Kainan had a son, Mahalaleel. Mahalaleel had a son, Jared. And Jared had a son, Enoch, and so on, all the way down the line. Each one of them had a son that kept the faith. That was important. They passed on their faith to their son. Very significant. We see this here. Now, each of these men that passed on their faith to their son was a man who walked with God, or lived for God. And we ask a question, was the God-fearing son of each of these men their firstborn son? And that's a question we can't answer again. You look at the list here, and we can say for sure with Adam, it certainly wasn't. Because Adam and Eve had, we know they had at least Cain and Abel, and they obviously had a whole bunch of other ones too, because Cain and Abel were married and married their sisters, and so they had a bunch of kids before Seth was born. Seth wasn't the third one born. There was lots of them in there in between. So we know that for sure, because Cain and Abel were grown young men by the time they Cain killed Abel. And so there was other ones in there. But you look at some of these other ones and you see how long they lived. You know, like Seth lived in 105 years and he begat Enos. Now, they had a long lifespan. You know, when they're living 800-900 years, when did they start bearing children? Was it like it is today? I mean, a couple gets married, and you know, if they get married in their 20s or 30s, very likely they can have children right away. So were these guys waiting until they were 105 years old before they got married? That's a possibility, but it doesn't really sound very probable. So my guess is that they probably, these their sons that passed on the faith were not necessarily their firstborn son. There's no reason to believe that they had to be their firstborn son. John Ray, you want to push that button for us, please? And as we look at this, another unanswerable question that we get here is in the case of Adam there, that we know that it wasn't his. But we see here that since we do not know how old these men were when they got married, that really doesn't help us any. And because of their age, when the God-fearing son was born, it does seem likely that it was not their firstborn son. It doesn't really matter whether it was or not. But one thing we do know is they passed on their faith to at least one of their sons. That's key. All right, now, the third fact I want us to notice here is that each man had many failures. Did you see another phrase that is repeated over and over and over and over again in this chapter? That phrase is, "And he begat sons and daughters." For hundreds of years, he begat sons and daughters. Most of them lived after the son that was took on the faith. They lived after that many, many years. Hundreds of years many times. And had sons and daughters. You know, you stop and think about that. If we extended the present childbearing years of our lifespan to 900 plus years, a woman could potentially bear children for 700 or 800 years. You could have a lot of kids in 800 years. A lot of kids. Can you imagine? We're having family over today, honey. Oh, how many of them are coming? Oh, just 700 today. Yeah. You could have a pile of kids in that long a time. And what happened to all of them? Did they not follow the faith? Well, we could say, well, they probably did. But there's some evidence that they probably didn't. Why is that? You look at the whole context of this situation. Why is it? Evidently, the other sons and daughters, most of them rejected God. Why do we know that? Well, Noah was a possible exception. He had three sons. He's the only one that's mentioned with more than one son who followed God. Noah had three sons. They're all called righteous in Genesis 1:7, where there was eight righteous people that entered into the ark. So they had three sons. They were married, so they found three girls that were righteous. And the eight of them entered into the ark. They were the only ones righteous on the earth. And we ask ourselves, here's another tough question. Why is it that Noah waited until he's 500 years old to have any kids? Is it possible that Noah had a slug of kids before the three boys were born that lived for God? I think that's a possibility. Nothing's mentioned about them. I don't know. It could be. It could be that he didn't have just three boys. He could have had a whole slug of them, but they turned away from God. But then Shem, Ham, and Japheth were born, and they lived for God. I don't have an answer for that, but there's things for us to ponder here. Did the other nine men only succeed in passing on their faith to one of their hundreds of children? Boy, that's a difficult one to think of, too. I mean, if you had 700 kids, and you only were able to pass your faith on to one of them, that's not a very good result. But one thing for sure is they did pass their faith on to at least one of their sons. That is significant. We find some clues to answer some of these hard questions. Look at Genesis chapter 6 and verse number 5. Very well-known verse. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. This was the description of the world that they lived in Noah's day. By the time Noah came on the scene, God said, everything I see, there's wickedness of man, was great in the earth. And God didn't say some, he said, every imagination of the thoughts of man's heart is only evil continually. They're constantly being evil in their thoughts, their plots, their desires, their ambitions, their activities are evil all the time. Find another clue. When Noah went to get into the ark, how many righteous people were on earth to get in the ark with him? Eight. That's all. Eight. You know, as I was pondering over that, I thought, and this is only an idea, all right? I can't guarantee this, but you can think on it. It is possible that during those years that Noah was building that ark, and it was many years. I don't think that it was 120 years like some people calculate, because when I preached on this some time back, I worked through this, and I don't think he was building the whole ark during that whole time. It was from the time God said, I'm going to punish the earth, and then when he got into the ark, 120 years, I don't think that whole time. But there was a good long time there that Noah was working on the ark, but Noah was also preaching during that time. The New Testament says he was a preacher of righteousness. Could it be that Noah had his three sons and some of the other relatives that were still alive, and maybe some of the neighbors that would be hired into the job of building that ark, it could be that they were doing that. And during that time, and again, this is total guess, Noah may have traveled all over the globe preaching righteousness, begging people to come. That's a possibility. I mean, if you got, you know, 60 years to do this, you could walk a long way in 60 years. It's a possibility. I know it's just throwing it out there. But the other thought, you know, you think about, well, how could they know that only eight people were righteous? What if there were people over on the other side of the globe that were a long ways away from them? What if they were righteous? And how come they didn't get over to the flood or to the ark? God says there's only eight people left on earth that were righteous. So somehow the people of the earth must have heard the news from God or from Noah that there was a flood coming and that they needed to turn to God. Something to ponder. You know, I'm throwing out probably more unanswered questions tonight than I'm giving you answers for. But things to think on, chew on, meditate on. Lots there to give our minds some good things to cogitate over. We know that God has created every human with a free will, and each must make his own choice to believe or to reject God. Everyone has a choice. Every one of us had a choice and have a choice. Are we going to live for God or are we going to reject God? And we have a choice. Every one of our children have a choice. Every one of our relatives have a choice. All of our neighbors have a choice. They can reject God or they can come to God. God has given man a free will to choose. And as parents, we must live out our faith in God before our children. And we must teach them diligently all that we have in our faith. And we need to talk of that regularly before our children. And likewise, we must pray fervently for each of our children and beg God to convict them and to convert them to faith in God. Now, as in Noah's day, the world around us is wicked, doing all that it can to lure the righteous into its vices. It's exactly what was happening during Noah's day. It was like the devil was trying his best during those first few generations to wipe out everyone who was godly. And if this was the case, if in these thousands of years that took place right here, if the only ones that were truly righteous were these 10 men, that didn't say much for the success rate. But God did not lose the battle. Satan did not win. Faith did not die. It carried on. It carried on. And the chain was not broken. And as parents, God needs to help us to protect our children from the vices of this world that will lead them astray and turn them away from God. And one of the best verses in the Bible that will help you as a parent and each of us individually is 1 Thessalonians 5:21-22. Prove all things. Hold fast that which is good. Abstain from all appearance of evil. And folks, if we would do that on a regular basis and apply it in every sense in our lives, it would help us immensely. And we've always got to make sure that our standard is not our opinion. That's where we often go back to, well, I think this. It doesn't really matter what I think or you think. What does God say? God's righteousness, God's holiness has to be our standard level and say, that is what is right. And everything I judge must be based on God's standard of right. And if I make my choices based on that, I'll make right choices. So we've seen three facts about these men. First of all, that each man lived for God. Secondly, that each man passed on his faith. Thirdly, that each man had many failures. But number four, each man was a link in God's chain. And that chain did not break. That chain of carrying on the faith and passing on the faith to the next generation did not break. It continued. And they continued to do that. You know, each one of them, even though, you know, you think, well, they had lots of time to pass on their faith. Well, not necessarily. You know, because you think about that in a home today. The greatest influence a parent has on their child is during those first 18 or 20 years. Child leaves home, goes off, gets married, has his own life. He makes his own decisions from then on. Oh, mom and dad can have a little bit of influence, but they've really lost the major part of their influence on him once they leave out of home. Okay? And it would have been the same in those days. You know, maybe they stayed home a little bit longer. You think of Isaac. Isaac, you know, didn't get married until he was 40. And maybe if they, you know, push it up a little bit and we can say, all right, well, they stayed home until they're 40 or so. Well, still, you only have that short span compared to 700 or 800 or 900 years. That's still a pretty small amount of time to have an influence on that child for their spiritual well-being. It was a limited time. And the time that we have is very limited as well. Often only 18, 19 years. To influence those children. And we need to strive to pass on our faith to our children. You know, this limited time that we have goes by so quickly. You know, we need to make the best of every moment we have. It just doesn't seem possible. You look back, you know, in how quickly time passes. It was yesterday that our kids were little babes, and now they're grown and have their own families. And it just seems like, phew, just yesterday, and it's gone. It passes like a moment in time. Then each of these men, they played a vital part in that plan of God by passing on their faith to at least one of their family members. It could be that a few more had faith in God, but somehow something happened that by the time of Noah, when Noah got into the ark, where did they all go? They were gone. They had turned their back on God. They had rejected God. There was nobody else that said, "Oh, Uncle Noah, can you take me on too?" No, nobody wanted on that ark. Nobody came to God. Nobody listened to his preaching. They all mocked him and turned their back on him. Something had happened. All of those generations had died out. They were gone. They rejected God. But praise God, there was one man in each of these families that stood and carried on and pressed on and led their family in the right direction. You know, you too are a vital part in God's plan. Passing on your faith to your children is not just a nice idea. It's vital. It's vital. And God is depending on you not just to keep the faith alive, but to help it spread and grow. We've got a huge job. And so as we look at these 10 men, we see that God was at work in their lives. And if God sees fit to give you children, you must make it a top priority to pass on your faith as those men did. Now, I did not bring out their failures tonight to give us a negative side to the message, but it's reality. Something went wrong. They had hundreds of children, and nothing positive is said about those children. And by the time Noah got on the ark, all of them were gone and had rejected God. Something went wrong. But the same potential stares us in the face. We've got to resist the devil. We've got to do our utmost best to teach and train and prepare the next generation and pass on our faith. It's not easy. But one of the greatest contributions you can make is to have a healthy and a close relationship with God yourself. You cannot pass on something you don't have. You can't. We've got to have a walk with God that is genuine. We need to live our faith before our children. And our children need to see it in our lives that we are living by faith. And it needs to be so real and so desirable that they will look at it and say, "I want the faith that Dad and Mom have. I want that kind of faith. That's what I want for my life." Oh, how we need that. We need to keep the scriptures before our children as a regular diet and teach them to walk and talk with God every day. Include God in our every activity of life, not just in our quick little prayer before we eat. Many homes, Christian homes, the only mention of God all day long in the home is when we say our quick "God bless this food" before we eat it, amen. And that's all they hear of God all day long. Sadly, some homes don't even hear that. But it needs to be more than that. God needs to be incorporated into our daily activities and our conversation and our all that we do. We need to pray for our children. Beg God personally each day for our children. God, please save our kids. Keep them on the right track. Pray with your spouse for your children. Ask God to convict them and convert them and bring them to truth. We've got a big job ahead of us. But folks, as we read this chapter, and as you read this chapter in years to come and days to come, think about those 10 men. 10 men who passed on their faith to at least one of their sons, and he carried it on, and the faith continued, and it did not die out because they were faithful to God. And we need to focus on the positive of this chapter, not the negative, and not say, "Oh yeah, well, you had a 500 kids and only one of them lived for God." That may have been true, but he had one that lived for God. And we need to strive not to just have one, but strive to help every single one of our children to be what God wants them to be. And ask God to work in their hearts, bring them to truth. We've got a big job ahead of us, but let's not let the chain break. Let's keep on passing on our faith.